Now we examine the case of the former pharmacist in Grafton who tried to ruin more than 500 doses of COVID vaccine in December. 46-year-old Stephen Brandenburg surrendered his pharmacy license this month and pleaded guilty to federal charges in January. What have you heard about the case? Do you have thoughts about what happened? What do you think of his employer's response, Aurora Medical Center? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. That's right, Conversation 800-642-1234. Rich Kirchen is a senior reporter for Milwaukee Business Journal. Rich, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So Aurora Healthcare, based in Milwaukee, it fired Stephen Brandenburg in December following this incident. Do we know why he tampered with the vaccines?
There were a number of facts that were reported throughout the court proceedings. He's charged in Ozaukee County Circuit Court and also in U.S. District Court. He believes that the vaccines, the Moderna vaccines, the technology that's used in them called messenger RNA is unsafe for people. And then he also had made statements apparently to coworkers that he believes they were of the devil. That's what we know.
How much damage did he cause while working as a pharmacist?
Well, we still don't have a definite answer on that. He did on two successive nights, which happened to be Christmas Eve night and Christmas night. He was an overnight inpatient pharmacist and had access to the refrigerator that had a box of these Moderna vaccine vials, 500 doses worth. He removed them from the refrigerator. A coworker found them and put them back in. So it's not entirely clear whether that tampering damaged the vaccine. It was sent back to Moderna for testing.
Mm-hmm.
And the court's system and Advocate Aurora have not said, they were used on some frontline healthcare workers did receive the vaccine the first day. They were concerned enough, Aurora was concerned enough about it that they did not continue vaccinating their employees.
The FBI and the Food and Drug Administration, their criminal investigation offices joined this investigation. What did the federal authorities look for in this case and in Brandenburg's background?
Well, yes, because he was charged first in Ozaukee County, and the DA in Ozaukee County was saying that there weren't really state statutes or laws that apply to his case. He is charged with a misdemeanor. But once the feds started looking into the case, they did charge him with attempted tampering with a consumer product, which, you know, sounds like someone was messing with a juice box or something, but it's obviously much more serious. They said that he intentionally and recklessly, wanted to damage these vials of the vaccine.
What are the penalties he could face as a result of this?
He actually faces up to 20 years in prison. However, I'm told that because he agreed to plead guilty and has been cooperating with the U.S. Attorney's Office, he's looking at more like 40 to 50 months. So obviously a much shorter period of time than he could have to look at.
A district judge denied the U.S. Attorney's Office motion to place Brandenburg in federal custody while he awaits sentencing. Why did the judge deny its request?
Yes, well, the U.S. Attorney's Office he's been free both on bond in the Ozaukee County case, and he was never put in any kind of custody in the federal case. The U.S. Attorney's Office said they felt he was a danger to the community, and they brought up a victim witness or victim impact statement from his coworkers at the Aurora Grafton Hospital saying that they were fearful of him, that he had threatened the employee who reported him. He had berated other employees for their views on vaccines and other things, that he had actually brought firearms to work, and employees, his coworkers, were aware that he owned a number of guns. But the judge looked at it and said that Judge Ludwig looked at it and said that Mr. Brandenburg does not have any prior to this, no criminal record, seemed to be, functioning member of society. And the judge also said, if they were going to detain him, they should have done it from the time that he was charged back in January. So he released him and allowed him to remain free pending the June sentencing. He did put some restrictions on him. He does have to wear a GPS.
Turn in his firearms as well.
He already turned in his firearms in the Ozaukee County case to the sheriff's office. But the judge also said there was a report from his ex-wife that he had a storage locker with some guns. So the federal authorities were going to look into that. Also, he's confined to his parents' home in Milwaukee.
We're talking with Rich Kirchen, senior reporter for Milwaukee Business Journal. He's taking us through the case of the ex-pharmacist in Grafton who attempted to spoil hundreds of doses of COVID vaccine. What kind of consequences do you think Brandenburg should face? Do you think he should be free on bond or in jail awaiting a sentencing? It's 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network. And now we're looking more closely at the case of the former pharmacist at Aurora Medical Center in Grafton who pulled dozens of COVID vaccine vials from a refrigerator, left them out to spoil. According to the plea agreement, 46-year-old Stephen Brandenburg believed in conspiracy theories and was skeptical of vaccines. What do you make of this case? What should be the consequences? Conversation is here, 800-642-1234. Rich Kirchen is a senior reporter for Milwaukee Business Journal, and he stays with us. Rich, let's turn our attention now to the employer, Aurora Healthcare. How has Aurora Healthcare's Grafton Hospital been affected by this incident?
Well, they did say in their victim impact statement that Brandenburg was considered a high-risk termination. So they did tighten the security at the Grafton Hospital. They added a couple of public security officers on weekdays and one on weekends. They moved an additional security patrol vehicle to Grafton, redeployed some of their public safety staff, their security staff from other hospitals to Grafton. And they also, I asked them for a statement, and they said that they, obviously the safety of their employees and their patients and visitors is of the utmost concern. And they encouraged their employees to continue to report, anytime they don't feel safe or secure.
Why wasn't there any reporting done by the coworkers or anyone else at the hospital before this incident occurred?
The only thing that I've seen on that was that in that victim impact statement, some of the employees had expressed concerns to their supervisors at the hospital prior to Christmas regarding Mr. Brandenburg's mental health, just based on some of the things he was saying. But as far as we know, he was still obviously coming to work through that period where he pulled the vaccines out of the refrigerator.
And what is known about his thoughts toward vaccines and conspiracy theories?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, he believed that mRNA in the Moderna vaccine was unsafe for the people who received the vaccines. He believes he's the prophet, and he believes the vaccines are of the devil. He believes the earth is flat. He believes that the 9/11 attacks were fake. Those were some of the things that came up in the court filings.
So timeline here, when will Brandenburg be sentenced? What happens next in this case?
Right. He remains free with those conditions we discussed before, and sentencing is on June 8th. And again, assuming he doesn't get in any more trouble and follows, the directions from the judge, then he's probably looking at that 40 to 50 months in federal prison.
Rich, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Rich Kirchen is a senior reporter for Milwaukee Business Journal. Ahead this hour, we explore the life and the works of American composer and pianist Florence Price. Are you familiar with her music? How does it make you feel? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. That conversation is ahead on Florence Price. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. And now we explore the life of the late composer Florence Price, who wrote more than 300 works for piano, symphony, orchestra, voice, organ, and more. She combined classical music traditions with the sounds of spirituals and West African rhythms, these influences of her culture. This is Juba for string orchestra. Are you familiar with the work of Black composer Florence Price? Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, conversation here. Stephanie Elkins is host and producer of Morning Classics, which airs on both the WPR's News and Music Network and the All Classical Network from 9 to 11 weekdays. Stephanie, welcome back.
Well, thanks, Kate. So great to be with you here. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm so excited to talk about Florence Price. And we just heard Juba, which is named for the Juba dance, which originated among enslaved people. Can you tell us about what she is doing with Juba?
It is such a wonderful rhythmic pattern. It came over with enslaved people from Africa, and they incorporated that rhythm and that music into the plantation music. And there's some syncopation. You hear a little bit of the blues there. And she uses a lot of the elements of traditional African-American music in her classical pieces. It's really neat.
I can't imagine how both painful and empowering it must have been for her to compose music that featured this rhythmic hand clapping that had originated among enslaved people. Can you tell us a little bit about her backstory and what her life was like?
She was a child prodigy. Her dad was very artistic. He was a dentist and an artist, and her mom was her first music teacher. And she grew up in this educated, artistic household in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was a mixed neighborhood at the time. Even Frederick Douglass was a guest in their home. And she ended up going to the New England Conservatory at a very young age to study. And she was one of the few selected to work with the director of the conservatory in studying composition. And she ended up with a double degree, organ performance and piano pedagogy. So she was just extraordinary.
What happened after she got those degrees and left Boston?
Well, she had started to compose already, incorporating some of that African-American influence. She headed back to Little Rock, and at the time, by the time she got back, things were not going so well there. The Little Rock that she knew was changing, and Jim Crow laws had been passed. There were riots. There were mobs. And she did get married. She was teaching. But the straw that broke the camel's back for her and for her husband was a horrific public lynching of a man named John Carter. And his body was dragged through the streets of Little Rock. And then the mob broke into a church, that Little Rock's largest Black church. And so that was it. They decided to get out.
And so she moved to Chicago. She was also a very spiritual person and connected to her church. What influence did that have on her compositions?
Oh, that was a great influence. Well, I think the faith that she had sustained her when she had to try and make it as a composer, being Black and being female. But the music of the church was what, sustained her quite a bit as well. She incorporated a lot of the great spirituals into her music, and she did it so skillfully as a craftsman. I mean, she was just as gifted as all of the greats of that era, working in that music into her classical forms.
Well, let's hear a little bit more from her. Florence Price, very broad and versatile in her compositions and creations. And this is a piece she wrote for the piano. It's called Fantasy Negre, played by Elijah Stevens. Stephanie, I can hear that mix of influences in there.
Yeah, that one is based on a spiritual called Sinner, Please Don't Let This Harvest Pass. And it has the pentatonic scales that so many of the spirituals have and just a rich romantic arrangement of that music. And that particular piece inspired a Black dancer and choreographer who created a whole ballet based on it.
In 1928, a major music publisher accepted her work at the Cotton Gin for piano. Was this a turning point for her in Chicago?
She won a contest, and she came to the attention of the conductor of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, the all-white, all-male Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and he became her champion. And so at the World's Fair in, I think it was 1933, he featured her music front and center.
Wow.
George Gershwin was in the audience. The future governor of Illinois was in the audience. And so that was really a turning point for her, yeah.
We're talking with Stephanie Elkins, host and producer of Morning Classics on the WPR News and Music Network. We're talking about Black American composer Florence Price. You can join in. How did you learn about Florence Price? What do you want to know about her life and work? 800-642-1234. Steph, she also had a very close friendship with another Black composer of classical music, and that was Margaret Bonds. What was their relationship like?
They kind of had a symbiotic relationship. Price became a teacher to Bonds, both piano and composition. And then Margaret Bonds became the chief, interpreter of Price's music, especially her piano music. And it was more than that because Price divorced her husband. There's some mention of abuse in that relationship. And the Bonds family took in Florence and her two daughters, and they all lived together for a while. And Margaret told stories about sitting at the kitchen table and working on orchestrating Price's pieces.
When you look at her works, she also played organ for silent movies. She wrote advertising music. She was, in a way, she was all over the place. She was doing lots of things.
She was. She did whatever it took, particularly after she divorced. And she would do whatever it took to make money. And she was always writing to publishers, trying to get her music published. She wrote a lot for her piano students. And those were her first real publishing income streams, were these little exercises for piano students. And she taught. And, she wrote jingles for WGN in Chicago. and she even wrote some pop tunes under a pseudonym. So, yeah. But it all really kind of comes back to creating music.
And some of her works were discovered, you know, relatively recently in 2009. What happened there in an old house?
Oh, my gosh, what a story. What a close call. There was a couple renovating a house south of Chicago. It had been abandoned. A tree had fallen in on it, broken windows, water all around. And they found stacks of handwritten music. And so, bless them, instead of chucking all that stuff into the dumpster, they Googled the name that they kept seeing on those manuscripts and discovered Florence Price, learned that the house had once been hers, and they also found out that the University of Arkansas had set up a special Price collection. And it turns out there were dozens of scores that were thought to be lost, including some violin concertos and some of her symphonic music that had never been published. So a lot of that music's been restored and edited and eventually published. And we're finally getting these new recordings to share.
Was this a home she lived in?
It was her summer home, apparently.
Okay. What a great discovery, and that is so fortunate that they were able to save all those works.
Yeah.
I want to end with her Symphony No. 1 in E minor, which was premiered by the Chicago Symphony in 1933. It's reminiscent of that African-American spiritual, the third movement, titled Juba Dance. Steph, how do you think blending in African-American dance rhythms into the fabric of these classical compositions, you know, takes on a new life of its own?
Well, she is a beacon for underrepresented composers and performers. And, you know, she deserves to be heard. The music is equally as skilled as somebody like Brahms with the Hungarian dances or Grieg with Norwegian music. And she's encouraging to all of us, really. We need to be so much more open to this kind of music, especially by blacks and women and people of color, because how many other treasure troves are out there for us to uncover?
And you're going to be presenting a conversation about her on March 2nd.
Right. It's part of the Badger Talks, and it's open to the public, and it'll be at noon on March 2nd, and I'll be sharing lots of her music and some photos and history and more backstory. So I'm really looking forward to that. And next week on the News and Classical Network, all of the hosts are highlighting some of her music throughout the day.
Steph, thank you so much for joining us and sharing her work with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Elkins is host of Morning Classics on WPR, and as she said, she'll present a conversation about Florence Price on March 2nd through the UW Badger Talks program. You can find a link to that free event. It's at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.